Yeah, those are.
Good afternoon. We're going to open up for now an informational hearing on the, let's start over. Welcome to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. We're going to open up a informational hearing on House Bill 5036, and once we receive a quorum, then we'll open up a public hearing. So we're going to get started here. Steve, is there anything we need to be thinking about as we get started?
Just a reminder, Mr. Chair and subcommittee members, that you're continuing, Secretary of State is continuing with their presentation. Because they're using the same materials that they submitted to you for yesterday's meeting, copies will be found in OLIS under yesterday's meeting to date, that is to say February 23rd. So if you click on February 23rd, you will find a copy of their presentation, which is what they are going through.
Perfect. Welcome. I'll turn this over to you and let you folks run with it.
Co-Chair Smith, members of the committee, for the record, Peter Threlkeld, Director of the Corporation Division for the Secretary of State's Office. Picking up where we left off yesterday, the current biennium, we had a budget note, and it was my responsibility to come back to the emergency board and provide information about whether we had run into any resistance with agencies in trying to expand our central business registry. I'm pleased to report that to date we have not encountered any resistance at all. We have broad support, and agencies generally think this is a good idea. It helps them with compliance issues and also helps to support and serve our mutual customers better. So we're currently working with the City of Portland and the Construction Contractors Board to add them into our system. We'll be working with other cities and licensing agencies later on. We expect or hope to have Portland and the Construction Contractors Board into the system within the next few weeks. We've also had conversations with the Department of Administrative Services about making sure in their stage gate process that there's a requirement for agencies that are coming through DAS for approval for new computer systems that they have to look at and consider enterprise systems that already exist, and the Oregon Business Registry, Central Business Registry, is one of those applications that agencies need to consider so that they don't go out and duplicate efforts.
Really quick, we are going to close the informational hearing on House Bill 5036, and we're going to open the public hearing on House Bill 5036. Let's continue.
Excellent. So in 2013, the Secretary of State proposed legislation that became House Bill 3459, creating the Office of Small Business Assistance as a function within the Secretary of State's office to help businesses when they ran into trouble or difficulty with state government. And our goal was to help them cut through the red tape. Co-Chair Smith had asked if we could have Ruth Miles, our small business advocate, come and present some information and answer questions. So at this time, I'd like to ask Ruth to come up and tell you a little bit about the good work that her office is doing.
Good afternoon. One moment, Ms. Miles, if you could. Senator Johnson really wanted to be here for this. Our caucus ran really late. I wonder, Mr. Chair, if we could rearrange. I apologize.
Would you mind, Ruth, if we just held tight just for...
Sure.
Would that be all right? Is that going to mess up the presentation if we hold tight for about 30 minutes?
No, we can adjust and come back to this.
I appreciate it. I know Senator Johnson was really eager to hear.
So what we're going to do is we're going to hold tight for 30 minutes, Ruth. We'll continue with the presentation. Once we get a few more of our members here, Ruth, we'll bring you back up.
Okay.
Perfect. Thank you for your flexibility. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So let's jump ahead a few and one more, and we'll come back to that. Okay. So we should be on slide 31 if you're following along.
Perfect.
This is our business registry program. Our focus is to make it as easy and simple as possible to start a business in Oregon. as this leads to greater entrepreneurship and company productivity. But we also want to see all of the existing companies in Oregon get the support that they need. That is one of the reasons that we work very hard to partner with the Small Business Development Center Network. We're communicating with all of the state's businesses every year. We send out 30,000 notices and acknowledgments for new business filings every month. And one of the things that we do in that is we have partnered with the SBDCs to market their programs so that businesses can find out about it, understand that the state has these other resources that are really available to help make that business successful and help them grow. So that's been a successful partnership for us. We also have one of the tools in our business registry program is our online search engine. And this is where we provide access to data and information about the businesses that are registered with us. We currently have about 393,000 businesses registered in Oregon. Every one of those businesses that has filed a document with us since 2009, those documents are available online as public record. Businesses can come in, they can do the search, they can retrieve the public record document and do that without having to put in a public records request, wait for my staff to have to fill it and pay fees. So this has been a very popular service. I want to talk a little bit about our classes of active business registrations. We really started doing this shortly after ballot measure 67 passed in 2010. And we have what we consider four classifications of business. We have our Oregon for-profit businesses, and these are represented in the blue line at the top. As you can see, the last couple of years, we're increasing those types of companies. These would be business corporations, cooperatives, limited liability companies, and other limited liability entities. The red line is our assumed business names, commonly referred to as DBAs or doing business as. They're the only group that's going down. This is a $50 registration every 2 years. The fee did not go up in 2010. It did go from $20 to $50 way back in 2004. And we've been seeing a runoff or a drop in assumed business name registrations ever since. So just kind of a slow runoff there. Really, I would attribute that to when people go to talk to attorneys, they talk to professionals or small business development centers, the advice that they're given is, why would you register or form a sole proprietor and assume all the risk and all the liability when the state offers you an opportunity to register as a limited liability company or a business corporation, and you can provide some protection for yourself and your family and your personal assets for just a few dollars more per year. So we really see the big growth area is in limited liability companies, with some of the other types of filings tending to drop off. The green line, that is our nonprofit corporations, both Oregon and foreign, which are out-of-state nonprofits. And our purple line is our foreign for-profit businesses. These businesses pay $275 a year. They're continuing to grow because basically we think that foreign companies are coming and looking at Oregon as a good place to do business and a place that they want to come and be a part of our market.
So what would be the best for transitioning? We have everyone we need here now. Peter, what's best? Do you want to, is it okay? Would it be all right if we?
Let's go ahead and jump back and we'll bring Ruth up.
All right, Ruth, come on up. We'll get right back on track here.
Thank you for your courtesy. It was running the gauntlet of the hallway.
We understand. Welcome.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Ruth Miles, and I'm the Small Business Advocate for Secretary of State, and I run the Office of Small Business Assistance. Thanks for this opportunity today. I'll try and make it quick because I know your time is valuable. As Peter mentioned, the Office of Small Business Assistance was created by legislators with the passage of HB 3459 in 2013. Its purpose to help small businesses in their dealings with state government, and conversely to help state agencies do a better job of working with their small business partners throughout the state. We opened the office on January 6th, 2014. The first case came in literally 2 days after I started the job, and it involved a gentleman who needed a private career school license in order to open a trucking school. I was able to assist him, identify process improvements for the agency. He did get his license. School's now in session, and now I get the opportunity to report this among the other 139 cases that I worked on last year back to you. All of the complex cases that my office works on are tracked in a case management system. We use this system not only to keep meticulous records of all the communication associated with a given case, but to track a number of data points on these cases for the purposes of reporting them back to you, to business associations, to the governor's office, certainly, of course, to the Secretary of State. During yesterday's hearing, Senator Johnson, you asked a very good question about how my office proactively works to prevent duplication of effort between the work that we do in my office and legislative casework. There's a few things that we do. First, I've met with most of the legislators in the building, not all. There's a few. Representative Taylor, we haven't yet had the pleasure, but I think you're on the schedule, to ask personally that if business casework comes in, that it be referred to my office so that it can be included in the data pool that I report back to you. I've also met with staff to do the same thing, and I'm still getting to all the staff in the building as there are changes, and there have been many during this session, lots of freshmen, lots of new staff. I continue to be a presence in the building on a regular basis to make sure that those relationships are strongly in place. In addition, we ask businesses who request assistance if they have or plan to request assistance from legislators. This is something that we only recently started doing because there are businesses, and well, business owners specifically, who take kind of a shotgun approach to asking for assistance. They're not just asking for help from my office and then waiting to see what we can do. They're sort of broadcasting their need to anybody they can think of. And Senator Johnson quite astutely pointed out that this is something that we need to identify and, to the extent possible, make sure that that's controlled. And so that's a part of our intake process now. And in fact, I opened a case last night after this hearing was over with, and that was one of those questions I asked. And I was able to head off this gentleman who needed assistance from then sending out, you know, five or six more emails to his state legislators and others that he knew. So that kind of gives you an idea how we deal with that. When cases are referred to my office by a legislator, I work with that legislator or their key staff who's working on the case to understand how much involvement they want to have in the process of solving the problem or getting to a solution, or if they just want to have some sort of recap. And that is different with every single office, and frankly, it's different with every case. I also work with Regional Solutions Team, the Governor's SITREP office, to make sure that we're not both working on the same case at the same time. And they work with me. So sometimes I'll get a call from them doing exactly the same thing that I would do, saying, hey, do you have a case with this person? Are you working with this person? So yesterday I brought copies of the annual report, and I believe you have a link to the report. It's quite a large format thing, and this is really what I wanted to show you. This calls out some of the data from last year's 140 cases that I worked on. If you look at this donut graph here, actually, directing your attention to the middle column at the top, you can see a quick kind of version of the story about Dave, who needed that license for his trucking school. But back to the data, if you look at this donut graph that's here in the left-hand column, you can see immediately that there's a big chunk right here, and that chunk is over a third of cases that came to the office last year, and they all deal with licensing and certification issues. Licensing meaning that you need a license in order to do business or a core part of your business in Oregon. Certification meaning that you need or want certification to participate in state procurement opportunities. So certification as a minority-owned business, woman-owned business.
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Miles, I don't know how to phrase this question, so bear with me for a minute. I look, for example, at the fact that OHA is 25% of the licensing cases. And obviously, we're still working with a pretty small number. Mm-hmm. I guess the question I would have is,
That's a pretty high percentage of the cases you're getting.
Yeah.
What percentage is it of the total licenses of analogous types that are going through OHA? Percentages only matter when you know what the numbers are, right?
Right.
So, I mean, to some extent. So if OHA is giving 1,000 licenses out a year for a certain type of facility,
mm-hmm.
I don't know what, a nursing home or something,
mm-hmm.
and 10 of them end up having a problem, right? That's a tenth of a percent.
Right.
But 10 out of your total number of cases, if you have 40 cases that relate to licensing, for example, makes it 25% of your cases. So it's 0.1% of OHA's licensing, but
right.
25% of the cases that are coming to you. So I just need, I mean, I look at these data and I ask myself, do we have a real problem at OHA, for example, or is this just an accident of the fact that there are a lot of licenses going through there? Am I making any sense?
You are. And
okay.
I don't have the answer for you as to
okay.
what percentage of OHA licenses provided are, I just don't have the number that
That's
you need
fine.
Because
I don't
it's from
expect
OHA.
You to, I don't expect you to have the answer. I'm saying that I'm just concerned. I'm trying to figure out if this is an indication.
Right.
You know, I'm somebody who works across multiple committees, as many of us do, and so I like to look at this from a multi-system perspective. So
sure.
if you could get us some sense of whether, you know, anything you can help us with would be great.
Absolutely.
Cal, maybe you can assist with that.
And I'm absolutely happy to get back to you with a more detailed breakdown of what that 28% represents.
Great.
Because there
so
is
much.
A little cluster of problems, but I believe the problems have been solved.
Oh, great. Thank
so
you.
I'm
Next
happy to
news.
Provide that information for you offline.
Thank you.
So that licensing chunk is a really critical thing to me, and you kind of beat me to the punch. That middle donut graph there is taking that third of cases or over a third of cases that are licensing and certification related and breaking them down by agency, and you see that OHA is kind of they're at the top with the highest percentage of cases. The OMWSBE office, which is the Office of Minority Women Emerging Small Business, part of Business Oregon, is second on that list. The reason that the OMWSBE office is called out by itself is because I have never had any other cases for any other part of Business Oregon, only the OMWSBE office. And I continue to have cases involving that office. If you want to hear more about the nature of cases involving those two agencies, I'm happy to talk with you about that.
Let's start with Madam Co-Chair, then we'll go mm-hmm. to Senator Johnson.
Thank you so much. And please understand, I'm coming right now from somebody who advocated strongly for the establishment of this office back in the 2013 session, and I'm delighted with the work that you're doing. I'm just trying to really understand. I see your office as the canary in the coal mine, if you will. Like, what does it tell us about how other state agencies are helping or not helping other people? What does it tell us about what we need to be doing? So, for example, for the women, minority, and emerging small businesses, is it because these are, by definition, people who have less experience navigating systems and therefore they have problems, or is it an indicator that we actually have a problem in that office? And you may or may not have a sense of that.
I do.
Yeah, please.
I do. In fact, I can point out what is the biggest problem that I have encountered with the OMWSBE office, and that has to do specifically with women business enterprises or those who are seeking that particular certification.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, there's a discrepancy between how the federal government does that kind of certification. They have what they call WOSB, Women-Owned Small Business Certification, and that's a self-certification process. There's a review process if you are not who you say you are. But our process is much, much more rigorous. And then the second and probably most important problem is that in 2012, the OMWSBE office in Business Oregon undertook a rulemaking that changed the playing field. It changed what you needed to do in order to get a Women Business Enterprise certification. It made a much more difficult standard than it was prior to 2012. And so those firms that had Women Business Enterprise certification or who had even looked into that prior to that 2012 rulemaking taking effect didn't know that the landscape had changed. And so going into a certification review, which is the every 3 year kind of thing that they do to make sure that you still are a woman business enterprise and that you haven't been bought out by some other entity, they're not told, or at least they weren't told, that the whole landscape had changed and that that it was a much more rigorous process for them. And that resulted in a whole slew of cases from women business enterprises who had either looked into the process before and thought they understood what the requirements were and found out when they applied that they had suddenly changed and gotten much, much more difficult to meet, or those who were previously certified. So that's the problem. I did with then Secretary Brown meet with the head of Business Oregon to discuss this issue. And they're in the process right now, as I understand it, of doing their own due diligence and better understanding what the policy implications would be if they were to make a change. And so right now, that whole conversation is in their hands.
Just a comment more than anything else. This is exactly what I personally hoped would happen with the establishment of this office, which is that not only would you actually help people navigate, but you would also identify systems issues that were interfering with business growth in Oregon. And I really appreciate the fact that you're going beyond that step and that you and then Secretary Brown did meet with Mr. Eisen and Mr. Robbins to go over that. So thank you.
Yes.
Sandra Johnson.
I guess that very narrow conversation dovetails into a broader question that I want to ask, and that is, again, the differentiation between case management, where you're actually solving individual constituents' problems, and you're identifying places where we need to make policy adjustments. And Senator Steiner-Haywood pointed out, when there are clusters of issues, but I'm looking for that part where you come back to the legislature and say, this isn't working. I also, you and I talk privately afterwards, but I think it's worthy of sharing it with colleagues. I want to know when you're talking to my constituents. You've done 139 cases, and if I were queen, I would ask you to break those down by Senate and House districts so that we know where you were. The one thing in our line of work that we like about the least is surprises, and we're handling a lot of open constituent cases. I don't want to hear, well, you didn't take care of us, but the Secretary of State did, and not know about it. The other larger question that I've got is how you are sharing the existence of your services. Sadly, Mr. Chair, I hate to report this, but I've had a new business open up in my district, and the gentleman can't figure out how to do his payroll taxes. And I've been around and around and around with him, so finally I asked that the Small Business Development Center handle it. Mm-hmm. They should have almost reflexively gone to you. That, for some reason, appears not to have happened. And so I'm wondering, as you're sending out your flyer or you're visiting with folks, are you making personal contact with the small business development offices? Do they know the range of your services? Are they accessing you routinely? I'm trying to look for those portals of entry and the lack of duplication, or the way to forestall the duplication.
Sure.
So those are really my big concerns. And finally, at the end of the day, if there are places, is it appropriately the Secretary of State that comes forward with legislation or recommendations for legislation for corrective action if you have identified patterns?
Okay. So the difference between legislative case management or my case management and then policy changes. So when a case comes in, it's sort of my ticket into an agency to ask them about how they're doing business, and specifically how they're doing business with this one specific concern. When I am asking those questions, what I'm actively seeking are systemic issues. What I want to know is whether or not the problems the one business has experienced are problems that many businesses are experiencing. And when I find that sort of thing happening, that to me is a systemic issue that needs correction, and it needs to be highlighted for the agency, for the business, for the secretary, and for legislators, frankly, in my view, for anybody who will listen. And so in those cases, I issue findings. Those are usually a 3 to 5 page report. They describe the problem, what I did to advocate for the business, names of who I met with, and my sense of what the problem is and what needs to happen to fix it. I don't have the statutory authority, of course, to make changes in an agency. The governor could do that, but I don't have that authority. But what I can do is highlight them. In cases where a legislator brings a case to my office, when policy arises from that, it is that legislator that has the opportunity to introduce legislation. And Senator Wittes actually has a bill this session that that came out of a case that first his office and then mine worked on and could not solve because at the base of the problem was an ORS that was affecting a number of businesses. So there's that. And when I do find a cluster of cases, I do mention it. And this annual report only is going to come out once a year, but I am happy to, and I do, provide up-to-date kind of up-to-the-day reports to legislators at request. It's just a matter of how much information you want. And believe me, all of these numbers, this is just a tiny little snapshot of what I track every single day. So I'm absolutely happy, and it's a very easy thing for me to give you kind of a quick update on what kind of cases I'm working on. Another thing that we do, go ahead.
If I can add a comment to Senator Johnson's concerns there. Part of what we had Ruth doing during the interim was come and speak and give presentations to some of the interim committees about the work that was being done. It was still a little bit early in the process, but conversations that then Secretary of State Kate Brown and I had when we were setting this up, those were really some of the interactions that how we engaged legislators, how we further developed those partnerships between the Secretary of State and the legislative body so that we could funnel these ideas, these concepts, suggestions, and, or at the very least, where the problems are or the trends of the problems were. We wanted to be able to get those back to the body so that the policymakers could, you know, bring the appropriate stakeholders to the table, say, this is a problem. Oregon needs to work on it. We need to craft, whether it's a legislative solution or if the agency had the ability to go, that that all of you could use your bully pulpit to really help drive that change, because as policymakers, you're in the best position to really move the state forward in those respects, where we're sort of that, as stated, that canary in the coal mine. We're kind of identifying, seeing the issues that are coming forward, but it's very important for us to work with you, and that's a part of what we want to continue to do.
Thank you, Fala.
Yeah, please.
Then I would respectfully request, you're back tomorrow. If you've only got 139, I've heard you say 139 or 140, let's say 140 for shorthand. If there are only 140 cases, and I don't mean to diminish that, that's a huge amount of casework, but could you break out for this committee what cases you've done in all of our jurisdictions?
Yes.
So that we could have that. And then the other question is whether or not there is we've changed governors, and I would presume that because Secretary Brown initiated this program, she would put a premium on it. But whether or not there's generalized understanding among the affected state agencies that when Ms. Ruth calls, somebody better do something. And I'm just asking, are there any fangs in this? So, and I'm again extrapolating, our new governor would probably be very eager to see this work out. But to make sure that when you call, agencies are cooperative with you.
Mm-hmm. There's some work to do there.
Why does that not come as a giant surprise?
It doesn't. But I will say this. It was my priority to get this annual report to legislators before anybody else besides the secretary. And certainly the governor's office has copies of this as well. But you guys were the top priority because you are boots on the ground in your districts in a way that almost no other people are. So the next stop is agencies, starting with the agencies that are listed in the report, like Oregon Health Authority, ODOT, the MWSB office. And what I'm looking for from agencies is an opportunity to have a conversation not only with those at the top, but those where the problems live, and make sure that they understand what the purpose of the office is more fully, and that they have an opportunity to ask any questions from me, because I'm not shy about providing them with recommendations to improve how they do business. And I'm happy to forward you copies of any findings that you're interested in and seeing. Or in fact, if you're interested in all of them, I'm happy to send those. There's not a ton of them. I did want to address the rest of your questions really, really quickly. We do have a map that we just started recently, but we've mapped all of the cases that were worked on since the inception of the office. We're still working on the whole notion of getting legislative districts so that we can clearly see, but I can do at least a rough estimate for you of what cases have happened in your own districts and get that to you pretty quickly.
So really then, quick, Senator Whitson, did you have a question?
I just wanted to just briefly We had a situation, in a personal property tax situation that Ms. Miles helped us with. I mean, she identified the problem by her contact. Personal property taxes follow the equipment. If you buy a used piece of personal property, it has a tax lien on it. It's almost impossible to find out if you do have a tax lien on it. But the tax man cometh after you buy it, and he wants the back taxes, the principal, and the interest, and penalties.
Right.
So I would say that I wouldn't say that Ms. Miles was aggressive, but she is assertive, and she absolutely wanted this fixed, and we're going to get it fixed, and it's largely because of you. And so we incorporated the Secretary of State's office, the Department of Revenue, the county clerks, the county tax collectors, the legislative council, Alan Dale, and that bill just moved through Judiciary with no opposition and going to Senate Revenue.
That's great. And it
solves the problem not just for that one individual,
but potentially for
the whole class of individuals, and it will create a searchable database of property tax liens in the Secretary's office. If you go forward and do your due diligence to make that search, you become a bona fide purchaser and you don't owe the tax.
That's really
Senator
cool.
Johnson.
One last comment is that you might want to think about, as your office gathers cachet based on these kinds of success stories, of putting a little responsibility on legislators to come to you with adequate information. I know that whenever I call PERS, that it is helpful to have the PERS members' PERS number, their birthday, their Social Security number, some succinct problem statement, so that when I call them up and I say, here's my issue, they've got a place to pull a thread and to start the story. And you might want to have some kind of a standardized intake form so that we are providing you on behalf of our constituents with information that uses your valuable time more efficiently, because you've got a starting point. You've got the basic fundamental data to begin your inquiry with other agencies in a way to identify the person who needs the help in a meaningful way. Because I think as you begin solving more of these issues, more people are going to be knocking on your door, and there's just one of you right now, correct?
One advocate, one admin.
And so you're going to need a way to manage your time efficiently. Ask us to help do some of that preliminary footwork to make it more efficacious.
Thank you. I think that's a fabulous suggestion, and I'll do that right away.
Let me share one other thought. And I also have stories I could share of equal success. So well done.
Thank you.
The one thing I want to caution is I think you have to have a mechanism to also protect the confidentiality of the business owner. If I'm contacting your office for assistance, I'm under the assumption my entire story is not going to be held out in a public hearing for display for legislators and the news and everyone to hear about.
Good point.
And so I don't know the balance of addressing the need of the senator, because I hear that loud and clear, and at the same time protecting that confidential, sensitive information of an entrepreneur. I don't know the answer, but I would ask you to think through that for the future.
Co-Chair Smith, that was actually written into the legislation that passed in 2013. So but before we go out and release information, we do work with the business. If they have proprietary information that we provide to us, that does not go out into any of the public reports.
Perfect.
That's why the little stories that you see behind the data, these bolded areas in this report, are one paragraph. The actual documentation behind those cases is, in some cases, reams worth of paper. It's screens after screens after screens after screens. It's all electronic, so don't be horrified because we're using paper. But it's a ton of information, and privately, I'm certainly happy to give you some of those details. But there are a number of them that are absolutely confidential.
So let's do this in the interest of time. I think you've heard strong advocacy for the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
So, is there any concluding thoughts you want to share with us here, and then I'm going to keep us moving because we do have limited time.
Only to say that if there is anything that I can do to support you, your offices, your business constituents, please don't hesitate to call ever. I'm just across the street, and that's what I'm there for.
Awesome. Thank you. Any final questions? Thank you so much. All right.
So we'll go ahead and advance a couple of slides. This is just a couple of text base, and I would just like to thank this opportunity, Co-Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, for the wonderful segue into our package request.
You're good.
I'm here to help.
Well, we've only been open for a year. One of the things that we started to notice is Ruth has been traveling around the state. She's meeting with, I think she's met with some 40 or more chambers of commerce. She's held town hall, participated in town hall meetings with legislators throughout the state. That's something that we want to continue because that's a big part of our marketing and our outreach and making sure that we get out into the communities all over Oregon so that we can advertise and let them know about this program. But with that has come this increase in caseload. And while we've just started, as we started to project out, if it continues to grow in the manner that it has, we really believe that we're going to start to hit some capacities. We're going to hit start getting behind on the amount of work that we're able to do. So we did want to go ahead and ask for the next advocate position. It's something that we would request that the committee approve. Our expectation is that we wouldn't fill it until probably next February, but that's based on when that need really arises.
Senator Johnson?
Maybe I'm just feeling neglected, but you've made comments, both you and Ruth did, about being out and about around the state. I'm not aware that anything has happened in Northwest Oregon, and it is entirely possible I missed a meeting, but I'm trying to figure out if you're in the district, does the legislator know that you're in the district? I mean, if you're meeting with my chamber, I'm interested in knowing for a variety of reasons. One is I'd like to come and advocate for the program. Secondly, whenever a agency, or in your case, the Secretary of State is in the district, I have an interest in knowing and being there or sending staff.
Co-Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, if we fail to do that, I apologize. We'll make sure that that happens in the future as a part of our outreach. We know that a lot of legislators, when there's some during the interim or there's a break period of time, they want to meet with the constituents and bring in business groups. This is really a perfect time to invite Ruth in. And as she's traveling around, she does do a lot of speaking, invites to chambers of commerce. And so we'll make sure that we notify your offices when we're going to be in your districts.
Thank you.
So I would just point out very quickly, let's make note of that to make sure that we are contacting our electeds. Mm-hmm. In the circles I professionally work in, I don't know if Ruth's ever in Salem. Every time I turn around, she's going to a chamber functions that I'm hearing about or meeting with a different group. And so I've got the other experience of, my goodness, she's always out and about. So, but why don't we make a note of that to make sure that legislators are notified as best we can.
See, she's doing it just right, Mr. Chair. You're the chair of this committee. She's in your good. District yeah. all the time. She never comes yeah, well, to mind.
She hasn't talked to me yet. She came and talked to me personally, which I appreciated, but I haven't heard about events.
This is my last plug. I do have to share this. A lady by the name of Debbie Pedro, who is the state chamber president, actually asked me to share with the committee her support for this position. And so that's coming from the Chamber of Commerce. State Chamber of Commerce president.
That's great.
So I want to get that on the record. Let's continue.
So if you're thinking about holding a town hall, think of us. If we can make it, get it in our schedule, we'll be happy to be there wherever you are in Oregon.
Representative Nathanson.
Regarding a town hall, thank you, Mr. Chair. Did it, had one in my district. It went very well. It was very well received. The information was stellar. The approach, the technical information, everything was just terrific. So thank you, and we'd love to do it again sometime.
Thank you.
Mary.
Okay.
Now let's continue.
So we would ask that the committee consider approval of this additional advocate position so that we can continue to serve Oregonians and the business community and continue to do good work. Also in package 362, we are asking to increase our one half-time position to a full-time, and this is really to help with customer service volumes resulting from bringing our call center back in-house. We used to rely on the inmate operators that I mentioned yesterday. It was fairly easy to recruit and hire another inmate to man the phones. But we are a little bit staffing challenged right now with being able to manage all of our call volumes. We currently get about 8,000 phone calls a month, and our folks who are on the phone, they provide great service, but they're pretty busy. So we'd just like to augment that a little bit. Additionally, there were, as a part of that reorganization, we reclassified 10 office specialist twos to public service representative fours with the additional duties that they're performing. Part of what we do, we have cross-trained all of our staff. There was a question, I believe, yesterday about how our staff break down across programs. We've taken a bit of a different approach. Instead of being more programmatically organized, we're a functional organization. So all of our staff know UCC, they know notary, they know business registry, and it doesn't matter what type of document our customers come and present to us, they can handle those issues, they can handle the phone calls, they can provide the answers, and they can do the work. So,
Senator Whitson.
Thank you. I was just wondering, is that a reclassification, a lateral reclassification, or is it an upward reclassification?
Co-Chair Smith, Senator Whitson, it was an upward classification. It is a zero net cost, so it did not increase the costs of the agency. But
You do that?
I would have to ask for some assistance from one of our budget experts, but is it Jeff?
Jeff Morgan, I'm the Director of Business Services for the Secretary of State. These positions, where they were at salary-wise, they were already in that upward classification. So when the budget is loaded into the PIC system, the Personnel Inventory Control System, it basically was a net sum because it wouldn't hit. It's getting them trued up for future biennium to be budgeted properly. But those, they were already in that salary range. That's how it worked out through the budget system.
So you reclassified them in follow-up.
Yeah.
You reclassified them into a different category at a lower step so that you can step them up to what do you want to pay them? Is that?
Senator Whitsitt, co-chairs, it's basically where they were salary-wise, their monthly salary. They were already in that salary range at the lower end of it.
So, if I understand you, it's lateral right now, but then you will intend it to increase their wages up to what they're classified as in the future.
Senator Whitsitt, co-chairs, that's how it would work out, yes, on
Thank
the
you.
Annual step increases.
So it's really not without cost, just without momentary cost?
Yes, Senator Whitsitt,
okay,
that's
thank
correct.
You.
Okay, so if we can go ahead and jump back up to this slide. Thank you. Okay. So this is our Oregon Business Registry application. So previously, this was known as the Central Business Registry. To date, we first launched the system back in 2007. We've registered over 280,000 new businesses through this system. And most of those registrations were completed in a matter of a few minutes versus taking days or longer, sometimes weeks, if done by a paper form. You can complete most of your new business registrations with my office. You can register with the Department of Revenue and Department of Employment. You can also do updates for your annual report with us, and we've done another 400,000 of those annual reports through our online system over the last few years. You can also update your registration information with Revenue and Employment. This slide talks about the growth and adoption of electronic filing. So I think it's really important to note that in this current year, we have finally surpassed 50%. So online filing is the new norm. This is how business is done between our customers and the Secretary of State. And as you can see, I added a trend line in there. We expect that it's going to continue to grow. I think that quite possibly by the end of this biennium, we could be coming that 52% might be hedging pretty close to 60%, and I expect it to continue to grow year after year, because one of the things that we've discovered once we implemented this system is the biggest thing that we can offer our customers that we can provide and save them is time. And time is, as I've come to realize, is our most precious commodity. We don't get much of it back. And any time that we can give back time to our customers so that they can focus on our business is a good investment, and it's time well served. The flip side of providing more filings online is that we have to pay Visa merchant card charges and American Express card charges. And where we used to pay $25,000 to $30,000 a month in those fees, we're now seeing increases. It's costing us $45,000 to $50,000 a month. And this is all related to where we talked earlier about bringing in a little over $70 million a biennium. There is a cost to do business and to bring in money.
Senator Johnson.
I don't know if this has happened, but I've heard this as a recurring theme in too many committees to not ask the question. And that is, as the customer, Oregonians, demand more use of technology, they're simultaneously demanding more convenience by the use of credit cards. We're doing it at liquor stores. I think soon we're going to be doing it at DMV. You're doing it. I'm told that the treasurer negotiates those fees with the credit card processors. And unless somebody wants to contradict me, I'm going to assume that premise is correct.
I believe that's the case.
And so what I'm asking is whether or not those agencies and offices that are using credit cards have gone to the treasurer and said, why don't you use your buying capacity, your purchasing power, to drive down the rates and frankly, increase the service. I don't know who the vendor is right now, but that seems to me to be a highly desirable contract to have with state government. Could you put it out for bid so that we could get the most competitive financial institutions bidding to do the business? But I just don't know why we're not hammering the credit card servicers with our purchasing power to get really good deals.
Senator Johnson, my name is Robert Taylor. I'm the Deputy Secretary of State. That's a very good point, and I'll follow up with the Treasurer's Office to find out what they do to negotiate those rates and if there's anything they can do better for us and the other.
Well, and I think I'd add we're going to have that opportunity in a week or so to visit with our state treasurer, and that might be an excellent question.
Yeah, but it's not just on behalf of the Secretary of State.
Right.
You would be a one in a bundle of beneficiaries.
Right. So is there a way to pass that cost on to the small to the business owner when they're registering and just capture that fee at that time?
Co-Chair Smith, there is an option to consider that. We haven't explored it at this point, partly because we'd like to make sure that we value online filing.
Sure.
It's fast, it's efficient. If we were to set different rates for online that were higher than filing a paper document, then that might drive people more to the slower other type of filing. The state's e-government provider, NIC USA, does offer a service. There some agencies have elected to use it. I believe the Department of Revenue uses it in their transactions with them. So it's an additional service fee that's charged to the consumer on top of that other cost, and that helps to offset that so that the state's not having to pay. The customer actually pays those costs versus the merchant.
But nonetheless, we've got an adjustment we're going to have to deal with.
Yes.
Okay.
So I have a background in banking, so I understand what banks are, what they're doing. The irony is, when you deposit a check, the bank can't charge you a transaction fee for that. But handling paper at a bank, cash or checks, those are their most expensive options. Handling electronic transactions are ridiculously inexpensive for the banks, but that's where they put the fees in because just of the way the whole system has evolved over time. Hmm. So.
All right, let's continue.
Okay. So this is the new landing page for the Central Business Registry. We've rebranded it as the Oregon Business Registry. We rolled this system out in October. This is something that we've been working on and toward for the last couple of years. One of the things that we did, we really took and listened to our customers in those thousands and tens of thousands of transactions. Every time we do an online transaction, we invite and ask our customers to provide us feedback about that ease of use. How easy was it to use the system? What concerns do they have? We took that information and we built it into this upgraded system. Some of the things that we provided, we incorporated lessons learned during some of our security incidents over the last year and the things that we learned there. How do we make the system better and more secure? But a lot of the focus was really around usability. I mentioned before that we can do registrations in minutes and hours. Just like to tell you a story. Over the last couple of months, we had a customer come through. By the time they hit our system, they updated their annual report. They went out to the credit card provider. They entered their name and address and credit card information. They hit submit. They came back to us, and about the time it took me to explain that, 71 seconds, they were done. And the system is just unbelievably fast now. We save even more time. We limit the amount of redundant data entry and that extra work that customers have to do.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Madam, or Senator Johnson.
Would it that you could get a DSL permit in 71 seconds?
I can share with you, committee, this process is very, very user-friendly. You folks have nailed it. Okay, so here's our situation. We have 36 minutes, and so I'm gonna prod to keep us moving as quick as we can forward.
I will do my best to wrap it up real quickly. So I mentioned we're working with the City of Portland Construction Contractors Board. We've had conversations with Bend. We want to bring them on. We're working with expanding. We'll have conversations with other state licensing. We want more of our registrations online. We want to offer certificates of existence online and make those for free so that people don't have to call us, write to us, pay $10, and just make that process go quicker. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Could I respectfully, I think I speak for some of my colleagues, ask that you put up in the priority list that Construction Contractors Board. That is an agency that has struggled ferociously, and they have a new director right now who I think is trying to reestablish trust and confidence with the people that he serves. And the registration is enormously burdensome. If you solve that problem, then you can go on and help him with continuing contractor education. But I would just respectfully ask that you move that higher up in the queue.
Co-Chair Senator Johnson, I've spoken with Jim Denno. He is enthusiastic about the partnership and working with us. And our teams are getting together at this moment working. And we expect within a couple of weeks we'll have that in place.
Great. So, thank you.
This biennium, we were working on we had a package, PUP 172, to update our business registry system. This is our big database that you can search and find out businesses. The operating system's out of date. We want to continue that work. We just ran out of time. Again, more city business licenses, more state licenses. We get requests every day now from our business customers say, this system is great. How can I add my other businesses? We're working on it. We want to continue to do that and make that easy for them. We also want to bring our trademarks applications online. Next. Notary detects and deters fraud. We have 41,000. We do about 3,000 filings a month. very quickly. We do notary seminar trainings around the state. We want to make sure that notaries understand the law, they know the process, they know how to do good and effective notarizations. As you can see, we're increasing, and we go to every corner of the state. If we haven't got to your community, let me know, and we'll schedule a time to get there. Uniform commercial code. So if you buy finance real estate, that mortgage is recorded at the county. If you finance a vehicle, it's recorded with the DMV. If you finance personal or movable property, or if you're a farmer and you could buy a big tractor or a combine, that is recorded as collateral with the Secretary of State. It allows the creditor to become a secured creditor versus an unsecured creditor, which matters greatly in the event of a bankruptcy. And so it provides a mechanism for small business and citizens and farmers to have greater access to credit. We also have online filing since 2012. We're continuing to add about 10 percentage points every month. We're just continue to see this grow and grow and grow. Again, it's another of our online filing successes.
And very quickly, before we move on that, again, I want to get on the record. Whoever's running that has nailed it. It is working extraordinarily well.
Thank you.
Very well.
This is actually the same system that we'll be using if Senator Whitsitt's Senate Bill 161 passes and the counties are able to record county warrants with us. It'll be through that same exact system. Again, we're over 50% in our online filing. We have over 1.5 million public record documents that are available to the public online. We do 300,000 business searches a month, another 20,000 UCC searches.
Representative Kalm.
Thank you, Co-Chair Smith. Just a quick question. When you talk about all these things and online happenings, I'm curious what your average age of employee in those in all these organizations to help you do this. Is it us old folks, or is it, you know, an 18-year-old just out of high school?
Representative Smith, Co-Chair Smith, Representative Comp, are you referring to the staff that work for me?
Yes.
So we have quite a range of staff. I have one staff member who started for us at about age 16 while she was still in high school back in 1974. So she's got about 45 years in with the state. She still looks very young and youthful. But we have quite a range of staff. So, we believe we like to hire and retain the best and the brightest, and it's important to us to attract and get good talent.
Yeah, please.
Yes. I just wanted to, you know, make sure that my 9-year-old grandson, if he applied, if he was eligible. And he's a good teacher.
When he gets his work permit, have him contact us.
Okay.
Okay. So we believe that we strive to be effective and efficient for the Oregonians that we serve. Again, all of our investing in technology, that's really changed the game for us. It helps us deliver service. As we revert back to Package 172 that Chris Mullen spoke about, yes, or 102. 100, sorry, that Chris Mullen spoke about yesterday. That is very important as we continue to expand and build out our technology systems and protect them and keep them available and reliable for Oregonians. We're very efficient. We continue to do more work with less. A few years ago, we were at 35.5 FTE, down to 31.5. We're doing more work per employee than ever before. The next few slides are key performance measures, and these are I like to think that they're pretty amazing. So we used to say that Oregon was very fast compared to our neighbor down at the south. A couple of years ago, I told you it took about an average of 1.2 days to register a business with us, compared to about 43 days in the state of California. California got tired of hearing the other states disregard them in that way, so they invested in systems. But we're actually right now about three quarters of a day on average To compare that with the best and fastest place in the world is New Zealand, and it takes half a day. So we're gaining on them. I think my goal is to pass them by in the next couple of years. Notary processing, we missed the goal the last couple of years, but we're nailing it this year. So we're at 1/10 of a day right now. Basically, notaries always process same day. Okay. UCC is even better. We're reporting that it's 0.0, but it's really 0.04. So it doesn't even round up to 0.1%.
I want to interrupt. I want to share what that means to business and the economy in Oregon. When a commercial lender is advancing a commercial credit to an entrepreneur, to a business, to a corporation, this allows that loan to close that quick, where in the past, if we were having to wait days, that entrepreneur, that business might have to wait 2, 3, 4 days, and transactions would just slow up. And so what you folks have created here is allowing commercial activity to flow, and that's huge for the economy of Oregon. So thank you.
One of the things that we've discovered is that backlogs are bad.
Yeah, they are.
Government should do everything possible to get rid of them, and we're very, very committed to doing so. Customer service, we're still exceeding the targets. We did have a drop in information available during the last year. We came down a little bit. A big part of this is we actually conducted our survey last May, which was just after we had our systems offline for 3 weeks, and while we were in the process of implementing enhanced security that frankly took us a little bit of time to kind of work out the bugs so that we weren't blocking the wrong people, but we wanted to, well, we want to block the wrong people, but we want to allow the right people in. So,
Really quick, how are you measuring these? Is there a survey that's going on out there? How are you gathering this data?
So our approach is we do a survey. We pick a week a year, and we survey all of our customers that filed that week. So it's 100% penetration of the people that did business with us versus trying to do something, over a longer period of time. So it gives us a good statistical sample size.
I think it's pretty impressive when you look at the helpfulness at 99%. That says a lot about what's going on.
Okay. Our biggest budget driver is the internet. And the rest of the world has embraced and adopted the internet. It's reset expectations. Customers expect immediate access, immediate response. They want it done now. They don't really care that we're government. they've lumped us in with Amazon and eBay and all those other online service providers, and they expect us to do our work as fast and quickly as they can get it anywhere else. Again, processing our documents timely, cutting government red tape, strengthening our online security and legislative changes. We did a lot of legislative changes. So we implemented, we moved our call center in-house. We have a new notary law, a new notary system from 2 years ago. The Office of Small Business Assistance. We implemented benefit company legislations. And as of today, we have 400 benefit companies in the state of Oregon. So we're actually adding about 60 new benefit companies every month. We also implemented House Bill 2643, which requires mandatory reporting from both state and local government agencies into the license directory if they have regulations that impact small business. We have two bills. We want to simplify requirements for business filings. We eliminate a consular core registration that's been on the books for 32 years. It's never been used. We want to take union label and fraternal insignia. They're basically trademarks. We just want them to their process to merge into the trademark process that we already have, and little administrative simplification and streamlining. We have going out of business sales that we think that the business can just self-execute their own notice, post it up, mm-hmm. and they don't have to file that with us. Senate Bill 77 eliminates new corporation soles. These are now used almost exclusively as a tax avoidance scheme. It used to be a valid form of religious organization. Each of the last 2 years, we've had double the number of filings we had in the prior 100 years combined. It's all from these groups that are marketing and saying that Oregon is the place to come from all over the country to file these so that you can avoid having to pay taxes to your state government or the IRS. Mm-hmm. We will be the 43rd state to have taken this action if this bill passes. We want to do online electronic notices, so when you're due for annual report, we can, and you want to get an email, we can send that to you. We can also send you a notice whenever anything changes on your business registration so that you can be a little bit more alerted and aware. We're converting our microfilm every time we do a public records request. We take that document and we scan it into our imaging system, so that's the last time anybody ever has to ask us to do the work or pay us a fee to do that. We have other work for our notary application, put more services online. And finally, I would say that our story is really about using technology to improve the services that we provide. Going back a little bit further than 20 years, we had 65 employees and probably less than half the work we have today. So. Had we not invested in technology, we would be the largest agency in the Secretary of State and not the Audits Division.
That's impressive. Any questions? Well done.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. That really is a success. It's a huge success. Welcome.
So good afternoon, Co-Chair Smith and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mary Beth Hergert, and I am the director of the State Archives. And I thank you for this opportunity to present the Archives Division budget. The Archives began operations in 1947 to house and provide access to the permanently valuable records of Oregon's government and to authorize the disposition of public records from all of Oregon's governmental entities. Today, the Archives Division is the state's information broker and information manager, and we strive to make as much government information available to the public, whether by accessing this information in a traditional manner, looking at physically the records at the Archives Building, or using the Oregon Blue Book or administrative rules, or using our website to access the ever-growing amount of information and records that we add on a daily basis. In addition, the division works with every state agency and political subdivision to help them manage their information, regardless of its format, from creation until final disposition, helping to ensure that the citizens of Oregon, that their government is open and accountable.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Senator Johnson.
You brought it up, and I just can't sit here and not ask, being one of your best customers, when's the Blue Book out?
Co-Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, it should be being shipped next week, and we will have it to you shortly.
Excellent.
After that.
Good.
Okay, so our budget request for 2015-17 includes the following. $7.6 million in other funds, the majority of which is collected through assessments. And a very small portion of our other funds is miscellaneous receipts, which includes receipts from the cost of copies being made for public records, a fee for non-specific research requests, the sale of photographs that my staff takes, and the sale of bags with Oregon historic trademarks. We also receive a small amount of federal funds in the forms of grants from the National Historic Public Records and Publications and Records Commission, or NHPRC. The limitation on this slide reflects a carryover from the previous biennium, where we had a very large electronic records grant, which was completed in June of 2014. And we also had a small grant from the State Historic Records Advisory Board, or the SHRAB. We have submitted a request to the NHPRC for another grant for the SHRAB. We've not received notification on whether or not that grant request has been granted. But once we do, we will be working with Mr. Bender to determine the appropriate amount of federal limitation we'll need for the coming biennium. The work that the Archives Division performs centers around making government information accessible, ensuring that it's managed in the most efficient manner possible, and that the state's historical records are preserved. We do this with a current staff of 22 full-time employees representing reference, with 6 archivists, including their manager, and 1 support staff. Records management, with 5 records management analysts, including their manager, 1 training specialist, 2 full-time employees that work at the State Records Center, and 1 that services the security copy depository, which is the microfilm for the state. And then the publications unit, with 4 full-time employees. The other 2 positions is 1 professional staff that serves all 3 units on various projects, and then myself. These program areas provide a wide variety of services to a very diverse customer base made up of the general public, elected officials, private sector businesses, and the over 3,000 state agencies and political subdivisions in Oregon. Our customers have come to expect the Archives Division staff to provide information and to perform services at a very high level as the state's information manager and broker. We do this by making the permanently valuable records of Oregon government available via the web, in person, by mail, or by phone, so that the customer can trace their family's roots, establish a property line, determine the intent of a particular law or statute, and look to see how a particular event in history has affected Oregonians. Providing state agencies and political subdivisions with advice and assistance on a variety of public records issues, and write retention and disposition schedules, helping to ensure that agencies manage their information in the most effective and efficient way possible. In addition, our customers also rely on our records managers to interpret and explain new state and federal laws and how these laws may affect the retentions, the records' ultimate disposition. Records managers and archivists rely on their professional training not only to identify Oregon's historical records while working in an agency, but to ensure that they are transferred to the state archives so that they are preserved and made accessible as well. We also manage the statewide electronic records management system called the Oregon Records Management Solution, which allows the tiniest of special districts to the largest of state agencies the ability to manage their information from creation until final disposition in a single system, making the management of public records systematic and routine and cost-effective while allowing access to this information through a web portal. We create standards and update laws to ensure that the use of technology will not compromise the retention or accessibility of public records. We operate the State Records Center, which provides state agencies with inexpensive storage for their records until they've met their authorized retention. They are then destroyed in a timely manner so that an agency does not continue to pay for storage of records that are no longer needed to conduct state business. We receive and publish administrative rules from state agencies and boards and commissions. Any changes to the administrative rules are published monthly and annually, ensuring that agencies and citizens alike have access to the most current rules. In addition, we also are responsible for updating and publishing the Oregon Blue Book. We accept first filing to the state's official documents, and we administer the state's Historical Records Advisory Board, which in turn works with all of the states, and these are the private historical societies, museums, and archives, to provide advice and assistance, train them, and assist them with the federal granting process. Our reference unit acts as the state's information broker by providing access to the permanent records of Oregon's government and by directing the public to the proper agency for records that are more current. Our customer base is diverse, and so are the records they access. We have developed numerous indices and finding aids to help patrons access the records of Oregon government, including our Early Oregonians database, the County Historic Records Guide, and an offshoot or a byproduct of our Oregon Records Management Solution, which is a web portal called WebDrawer that allows our patrons to readily access such things as the audio minutes and exhibits from the legislature.
So let me ask this question really quick. Mm-hmm. I'm on your website right now.
Mm-hmm.
Under early Oregonian search, it talks about an opportunity to look up Oregonians prior to statehood through 1860. Who's putting this data in?
Co-Chair Smith, my staff and our staff of volunteers.
I was going to say, do we have a group of volunteers assisting? I mean, this is a lot of work.
Co-Chair Smith, yes, it is. And it's something that we, our volunteers, some of them who are getting rather old, give us a lot of hours and get a lot of information in there. And then my staff provides them with even more information to get into the system as well.
Senator Johnson.
It causes one to ask, what do you do as far as ground truthing the information? I know that in some organizations, when one is required to present a genealogical tree, it is ground truthed very severely to make sure that it reflects accurately. So are you checking the source documents, or what level of review before this becomes actually part of a state archive?
Co-Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, we verify every single record, and we also have a process where if a family member has contradictory information or conflicting information, that we can take that information and compare it to the actual public records that we have from back then to verify that that is truly correct, or if what we have is correct. Census takers are notoriously creative in the way that they record names, and so we need to verify that what they recorded is either right or wrong. And so we verify every name that's in that database has been verified against a public record.
I guess I very much see the value of this, and I happen to have personal knowledge that the chair's family goes back about a bazillion years in Oregon. So this is an issue close to him. But I'm trying to figure out how this becomes a function of the state of Oregon, and why isn't this a function of, say, the Oregon Historical Society or...
Good question.
I'm just curious, how did this morph into our responsibility?
Co-Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, it actually was the concept or how we developed the early Oregonians database was actually asked by the state legislature before the 150th birthday, mm-hmm. is for us to put this index together based on the records we have in our holdings of people who actually resided in Oregon up through statehood. So that's how it has grown and morphed into what it is today.
Two other comments.
Yeah, please.
About the time of the sesquicentennial, a very comprehensive document, it's a couple of tomes about like so, was compiled tracing current Oregonians back to the core of discovery. And I don't know whether or not you have a copy of that, but I would be happy to make sure that you get one as part of our archive. It was fascinating to see people living in Clatsop County who can take their roots all the way back to the core of discovery. The other question is, do you ever solicit source materials? I'm thinking from organizations like the Colonial Dames or people who have rigorous research standards on genealogies.
Co-Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, we would really appreciate that. I can check with my staff to see if we have that book. Yes, we do work with other organizations to ensure that what we're getting, and if they were willing to give us the information, we would most readily accept it. A lot of times what they do is they verify the information for us, so we contact them and they work with us to verify what we have.
Any follow-up questions? Okay, so we have 10 minutes left.
Keep whipping along.
I'm going to...
Okay, so our reference services are driven by a demand for information, which is a combination of customer need and awareness of available services. We create demand by showcasing our holdings on the web. We are able to digitize audio that has previously been in inaccessible formats, so that people can actually now self-service themselves, for example, with the legislative minutes and exhibits from home. They don't need to actually come into the state archives. They can access stuff on their home computer. We've successfully completed our move from phase one from traditional shelving to compact shelving, and hope to complete phase two, which will I'll cover in our package. And all of our reference units activities are designed to promote government transparency. Our records management unit is the state's information manager. They do this by providing the state's 3,000 plus governmental agencies with advice and assistance, training, records retention schedules, technology standards, and a statewide electronic records management system for all of government to use. Our goal is to have agencies only keep information for as long as it's necessary to conduct the public's business, and to keep that information accessible to the public from creation until final disposition. Managing electronic records continues to be problematic and costly for the state, not only from a storage standpoint, but from a legal one as well. Since 2011, we have been offering all agencies at all levels of government an opportunity to manage their electronic records in our Oregon Records Management Solution, or ORMS. And ORMS is a software as a service solution with a unique twist in that the archives division manages, provides the implementation, integration, and training on the software to agencies wanting to participate, while our private partner, Shafts Consulting in Baker City, operates the hardware, software, and help desk in a private government cloud. We now have 22 agencies of varying sizes representing every level of government participating. In addition, Sweden has recently adopted this model after taking our business model and our business cases, and the members from Botswana's government are in the process of arranging travel to the archives to gather as much information as possible so they can put the model in their country. And our records management unit continues to operate the State Record Center with two FTE servicing the 90,000 plus boxes of records pulling for state agencies. Their accuracy rate is currently 100%, and they have a guaranteed return in less than 24 hours. So it is still one of the state's best bargains. Our publications unit is responsible for receiving, for filing, verifying, publishing, and maintaining the administrative rules for state agencies, boards, and commissions. They publish an online monthly bulletin that includes notifications of rulemaking actions, including any changes, additions, or deletions of the agency's administrative rules. They print an annual compilation of all the state's administrative rules and also maintain this information online. And they provide advice and assistance and training to the state agency's rule coordinators. The unit is responsible for updating and publishing both online and in print the Oregon Blue Book. The online version was released on February 12th, and so I hope you've had a chance to go take a look at it. The new version, I said, is scheduled to ship out of Michigan on March 5th. It features a cover photo of Lithia Park in Jackson County, which was one of our previous unrepresented counties, as a photo for the cover contest. And we have our color insert is focusing Oregon's rural schools prior to World War II. And we've updated the agency descriptions to focus more on the missions and functions of the agency. And finally, for the first time, we asked Oregon's elementary and middle school students to write an essay on why they love Oregon and their favorite places to visit. And the winners of that will also be included in the Blue Book. And believe me, they were of really high quality responses. Neat. And I think you'll enjoy them.
Who judges?
Yeah.
Who is the final arbiter of the pictures and the essays? And
Co-Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, we open it up to the entire agency to judge the photos and judge the essays. And based on that is how we pick the contest. Ultimately, the Secretary of State has the final decision, but we give them our finalists based on the agency-wide contest.
Thank you.
Okay, our budget drivers and challenges. Although it's a challenge, we view it as a positive in that our workload increases mean that we are doing is actually making government more accessible and transparent, which means we are meeting our goals. The Oregon Records Management Solution continues to grow with our 22 participating agencies, and there are a number of them still in the queue to come on board. But because of our small staff with competing priorities in records management, we had to look at streamlining our process in order to get more agencies on board more quickly. The publication unit continues to see rulemaking activity increase. And so, again, with a small staff, we found to do this more efficiently. So we actually sat down and leaned out our internal processes to remove a lot of redundancies that had been built in over time. And we are in the process of redoing our software so that we can rebuild and redesign the database to help with these increases in our workload.
We have a question, Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to reassurance that is a correct figure, 15,500 new or amended rules in a two-year period?
Co-Chair Smith, Senator Whitsitt, yes. That's a notification, that's good, notices.
Good grief.
You've got your new talking point.
That includes the notification and then the rule, but it's still a lot.
It's not your problem, it's our problem.
Finally, as the workload increases, and in almost my 35 years of being in this profession, I never thought that I would see the day when archives would become mainstream. But because of our efforts to get more information out, this past year we've taken on the added role of playing host to television and radio crews, published articles in technical and professional publications, and we actually sold our early Oregonian database to Ancestry.com, so it now resides on their website, which directs them directly to us.
Mr. Chair,
yeah.
How did you establish a price for an invaluable document like that?
Co-Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, all we could charge is what it cost us to reproduce that and send that to them. So the cost was $1,500, but we couldn't go back and charge what the labor and time it took us to put all those names in there. So that's
why.
Because the way the statutes are set up for what we can actually charge for.
Do we need, the horse is out of the barn at this point, but that's incredibly valuable data.
Co-Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, I agree.
Representative Nathanson.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senator Johnson's question was, piqued my interest because I've asked similar questions in other subcommittees. For example, Legislative Council preparing access, online access, which replaces print access to statutes or indexes or finding tools and so forth. There's a great amount of value added. So what is our ability to recoup the cost of that when we used to charge for the printed document, but we're supposed to not charge for an electronic document? It's a concern, not just in this budget, but I think it might run across agencies. I'd like to continue to look into this.
Okay. We have 1 minute.
All righty. The archives is continually looking to find more efficient ways to do our jobs, and most of that includes using technology. We are in the process of placing our administrative rules database to create a system that allows us to work in the most efficient manner, but would be fully searchable for public and agencies and features a print on demand. So we would get out of the printing business of the compilation. The reference unit fulfills more requests today electronically than ever before. It does save time and money, but means we need to access electronic drop boxes such as Mail Big File in order to fulfill these requests, which raise some security issues. So we work closely with our Information Services Division in order to find the best solutions, ensuring security without compromising access and efficiency. However, all of our technology issues don't deal with automating or streamlining business process. As the State Archives, we deal with older technologies that are now woefully out of date, and it is left up to us to find ways of keeping the information accessible and migrating it forward. For example, the legislative audio tapes, there are no fewer than probably 20 formats that audio tapes are in. For years, we've carefully tried to maintain players and have been on the lookout for equipment that are no longer available. And over the past 2 years, we have gone to eBay to purchase equipment, but have had to figure out how to digitize that audio so that the tapes could be heard. Fortunately, I have a member of my staff that likes to tinker, and for $15 found a way to cobble together some wire and connectors to take the Rolls tapes that were part of the 67 and 69 legislature and digitize these into MP3 format. And unfortunately, that's a strict hour-to-hour conversion, so there is no fast way of doing it, but we continue to do that. And we have made all of the landmark legislation from 67 to 69 now available. It's been digitized, but we still have about 1,000 of those tapes to get through.
Okay, so here's where we are. How many more slides do you have?
About
nine.
Can we carry those over to tomorrow?
Sure.
Would that be all right?
Yeah.
All right. We're out of time here.
I was just wondering.
You bet, Senator.
Mr. Taylor, is there some way that you could break down those administrative rules into rules that are made by with the input of a Rules Advisory Committee, and then rules that are just made by the agency with public comment, and then rules that are just made by the agency, period? I mean, could you give us, would that be something you could do without spending 100 hours?
Co-Chair Smith, Senator Witsa, we will do our best, yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All righty, so we're a few minutes after our time. Mr. Bender, what do we need to be thinking about?
Well, tomorrow's the last day you have scheduled for a public hearing. The agency will complete the presentation of Archives Division and then move on to presentations on the Audits Division, the Elections Division, the Administrative Services Division, and then public testimony.
I didn't do a good job managing my time, Madam Co-Chair, but we did have a good day of information.
I'm sure, and I apologize for having had to step out.
Okay, so what we're going to do is ask for an abbreviated presentation tomorrow. And so if you could go through your remaining slides and pick out those that we really do need to cue in on and those that perhaps we don't, if that would be all right. We do have the full presentation before us, so as members of the committee, if we need to address any of one of those tomorrow, let's feel free to do that.
But and we have the opportunity to bring back more stuff in phase two, since the Secretary of State's office will be back with us.
So what I'm going to ask is that if you folks could just really abbreviate it down tomorrow. All right. We appreciate everyone's time. Are there any other questions, any other comments? Mr. Bender, we're good. Julie, we're good. All right. We're going to adjourn for the day. Julie, we're good. All right. We're going to adjourn for the day.